Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hey, it's Mraz. You know maybe the best thing to come out of 2020? Me doing more work putting together the best of the DA show. Keep it locked here from the best from today.
And we begin in Tampa Bay because we do have two games last night, Monday nighters. The Steelers upending the Giants and the Titans behind four missed kicks from Steven Goskowski finally get a made kick to survive in Denver. But the story all around the NFL is clearly Tom Brady and what happened to him and the Bucs in week number one. In that game that most of America watched, pretty obviously from the TV ratings, Brady was very underwhelming, and so were the Buccaneers. So much so that Tom Brady, the lasting image of him after Sunday, was him getting tossed down onto the field with another errant pass or another broken coverage or broken play by that Saints defense. And when the dust settled, Brady didn't look like a savant, an all-timer, this kind of will never get old Peter Pan of the NFL that will forever stay young. Instead, Tom Brady looked every bit of 43 years old and every bit of all of the other cringe-worthy, beautiful, wonderful Hall of Fame quarterbacks that went somewhere else and had some of those ugly moments. I mean, it's not Johnny Unitas in San Diego. It's not Joe Namath in Los Angeles with the Rams. But there were some moments on Sunday. Now remember, we've had aging quarterbacks go elsewhere and have success. Joe Montana was a guy that in two seasons in Kansas City went to the postseason twice and went to an AFC championship game. He had Montana magic still left in his arm, just not as much as he had years before in San Francisco. Brett Favre goes to an NFC championship game in Minnesota after departing Green Bay. We've seen guys go elsewhere as future Hall of Famers and not always look awful. I mean, Peyton Manning ended up setting every single season passing record in 2013 after leaving Indianapolis for Denver. But the end was always difficult for all of them. The end in Minnesota for Brett Favre, the very end for Joe Montana, the very, very end for all of these guys, no matter where they go, if they had success. Look, Peyton Manning at the end wins a Super Bowl, but he can barely throw a forward pass. So it brings us to Tom Brady. And for Brady on Sunday, look, the pick six is very un-Brady-like for all but his last four games, because we've seen a pick six in the wild card game. We saw a pick six in week 17. We saw a pick six on Sunday. Going into this weekend, Tom Brady does not want to be in the same company as Matt Schaub, who once threw a pick six in four straight weeks. So you think, though, that it's early in the season. It's a brand new offense. It's a brand new set of skill position guys. And his head coach, Bruce Arians, is going to give him some leash, right? That's obviously what's going to end up happening here. Bruce Arians is going to tell the world that you know, Tom Brady's going to be fine. We had some broken coverages, Tom. It wasn't his fault. You know, we didn't do enough around Tom. We didn't protect Tom enough, all of that type of jazz, right? That's what you would expect. No, not for Bruce Arians, who very pointedly said, yep, those are Tom Brady's fault. Yep, I don't know what he was seeing there. He's got to be better. Really? So why is Bruce Arians willing to call out Tom Brady? That's the biggest question of week number one of the NFL. That is where we begin. It's your cold open.
He looked like Tom Brady in practice all the time, so it's kind of unusual to see that in the ball game because they didn't do the things that we didn't get ready for. Everything they did, we thought we were ready for.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. There's nothing we weren't prepared for. Everything that they did, we thought we were prepared for. That's Bruce Arians saying it's not the game plan. That's Bruce Arians saying it's not the offense. That's Bruce Arians saying that's not the wide receivers. That's Bruce Arians saying the quarterback's got to be better. And he had fuller thoughts on that yesterday as well. And here's why I think Bruce Arians is saying that. I think number one, Arians doesn't want to run the risk of the locker room saying, hey, you're beating us all up, but you're not beating Tom, and Tom hasn't done anything around here. You know, it's one thing other places where you've succeeded, you've won a lot of games, you've had rings like in New England. If you want to love up Tom Brady after a bad game, you know, you can do so because he has brought that locker room wins and championships and already has the built-in respect meter. And Bruce Arians can't expect, as they kind of turn this franchise around, or at least try to excuse away Brady's mistakes, but keep hammering everybody else's, right? That's one thing that he can't do if he is trying to gain everybody's respect within that locker room and also trying to change the culture around there. It's not a place where they've won before. So you can't just ignore away Brady's mistakes. Number two, I think that Bruce Arians might be worried, I'm not sure, but there could be a worry that Tom Brady's so big, he is so famous, he is so popular that there might be times where Brady might think of himself as kind of impenetrable. And maybe there's a celebrity aspect to Brady. And perhaps for a guy like Tom Brady, who obviously has tons of adoring fans and adoring media, you know, maybe he does make some excuses behind the scenes. Maybe he does sometimes think that just because he's wearing number 12 and has Brady on the back of his jersey, everything's going to be fine. We only know him as a workaholic, but behind the scenes, there could be a little frustration, at least a little exhaustion from Brady's public persona. And I say this because he's always on social media. He's like Schwartz of NFL quarterbacks. Okay, he's always playing the Tom Brady card. And I think in New England that ran its course. And I wonder if Bruce Arians wants to kind of nip that in the bud and say, we're not just going to make excuses here. If you're bad, you're bad. And then there's the third part. And the third part is the hardest part. The third part is the part that a lot of media did not want to admit and a lot of fans do not want to admit because he is a hero. But Brady's going to have a lot more days like that. And that in New England, Bill saw this coming. And in Tampa Bay, Bruce saw for the first time that Tom is 43 years old. That Tom's going to play at times like 43 years old. And when Tom plays at 43 years old, you can't excuse it away because it's just bad football. And while I thought the biggest story of Sunday for the Buccaneers was that Brady didn't have all of this highly sophisticated, highly executed, highly accountable teammates around him, he had a defense that botched coverages, a special team that fumbled balls. He had an offense that didn't look that good. He had guys drop passes. All of those things never used to happen in New England. One of the obvious outcomes of Sunday also is that Tom Brady looked 43 years old. And that's going to be a hard crash and burn for a lot of people that just figured he would live forever, football-wise. But I think that that's the reality here that Bruce is getting in front of. How is he going to sit in front of the media and say, well, we got to do this better, got to do that better, got to do that better? But at the end of the day, it was Brady's fault because Brady's skittish because of his age. He's not reading things correctly, perhaps for whatever reason at this point in his career. His throws are scattershot. He's getting nervous. I mean, you know, pick sixes happen usually when you're not seeing something that you should have seen or your arm can't get it to where it needs to go. This happened in three straight games now. This is a trend for Tom Brady. Also, Bruce Arians don't give a you-know-what. He just doesn't he's just not polite. And what Bill Belichick did in situations like this was not excuse Tom Brady's play, but just not talk about it. That's just going to be Belichick kind of pushing away from the dinner table and not going to address it because he's not going to address it. Bruce Arians is going to address everything. And because he's going to address everything, he's going to be pretty honest. And pretty honest from Sunday is that Brady made a lot of mistakes. 855-212-4CBS on Twitter, DA on CBS. Hey, Mraz, what do you think the biggest reason is that Bruce Arians was willing to call out Tom Brady yesterday?
I was so blown away and so confused, DA, when I saw this because my initial reaction was, wait, I thought Tom Brady was trying to get away from this. My guess is Bruce Arians, as much as he's the family, wholesome coach, is trying to challenge Tom Brady and say, hey, you might be relaxed, this might be your offense, but that ain't good enough. And again, I just question whether Tom Brady went there to be challenged. That's the only thing I can come up with is that that's what Bruce Arians is doing, which just to me seems like the exact opposite of what Brady looked like he was trying to get himself into.
Maybe, but Bruce Arians is going to have to do it if they want to win football games, because I think he's going to lose a lot of credibility in that locker room if Tom Brady's playing like the 20th best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, there's nothing wrong with Tom. We got to protect better. We got to run better routes. We'll fix this in the film room. You know, I think Bruce Arians is worried about his own credibility inside the locker room if he makes excuses for Tom Brady when everybody inside the locker room realizes it was the quarterback's fault. That's what happens when Bruce Arians says, you know, it wasn't the game plan. We were prepared for everything. He can't go public and say, yeah, we got to do this, got to do that, we got to change this, because he knows his guys behind the scenes know that the game plan was right, unless he's just an egomaniac and can't admit that his game plan was wrong.
Yeah, but can't you say that in the locker room and not tell the media that? Like, can't you set an example in front of those guys and challenge Tom Brady in front of his teammates and set the tone that way? I mean, by doing this publicly, it's chum in the water for all the Sharks and everybody today to wake up and go, oh, trouble already for Brady and Bruce Arians. Like, there's no reason the media has to know that, and the public has to know that you think your game plan was good and this was all on Brady. The locker room can know that and respect you for that if you call them out, but why do we need to know that?
Maybe. I mean, this could be, though, the case of Bruce Arians can't change his ways this late in his life, this late in his career. This is the way he's always been. He's treated everybody like this, and he can't make an exception.
I guess, but you're telling me this morning they opened up the paper yesterday, and not that they get in the papers. I can't imagine Giselle sitting there reading the Tampa Bay Times, but that family's happy. Giselle flips out over every little thing internally. You're telling me Tom Brady and the Brady Bunch are all happy, the happy campers this morning, that Bruce Arians is publicly throwing them under the bus after 1 week? That can't be sitting well there.
No, I don't think it is. I mean, I think a valid theory is that Brady in the last couple of years wanted to be treated differently than his gameplay suggested because of all he had accomplished. And they saw this in New England, and Bill was just sick of playing that game. And Bruce inherited it and is like, no, it's not going to happen over here either. You've got to be held accountable like everybody else. Maybe Brady is getting a little loose with his fundamentals, getting a little loose with his preparation, and he's trying to put on the social media show, but behind the scenes, it's ego time all over the place.
Maybe it is ego time. I mean, that wouldn't shock me, but again, he did do a lot of social media stuff like he was me or like he was Schwartz about how hard he was working, this, that, and the other. And I think we all expected Tom Brady, if he was going to look his best early in the year because that would be when he's the freshest. And maybe that is Bruce Arians calling him out. And that's, again, the only conceivable explanation is what you're throwing out there. I just don't know if this continues for a couple weeks here and Brady doesn't look like this. And now Bruce Arians has already fed, you know, basically the masses that this is a problem. And if people keep harping on this, this could unravel and not end well in Tampa already in year one.
Totally. And it is four quarters of football. And so we've got a long season to go. And I think we're going to see some moments this season where Brady turns back the clock. I think you're going to see a 2-minute drive to win a football game. And Brady's going to slice and dice them. I really do think we'll see flashes of that. But it's a long football season, and when you're 43 years old, it gets longer and longer and longer. And got to give them some time to figure this out. Got to give the offense some time to all coagulate because they've come from all different areas of the NFL. But it sounds like I'm going to take a victory lap here, but I'm not. It's just that 43 years old is 43 years old. And at some point in time, Brady was going to look his age. It does not last forever. And I think a lot of people just kept wishing it away. And you can't forever. There's just a reason this has never happened. And yes, Brady's treated his body like a temple. And Brady is pliable and flexible and all of the things that he has worked so hard for. And he's got good genetics and all of that. But at some point in time, 43 is 43. And just because 42 didn't look like 42 or 41 didn't look like 41 doesn't mean when he hits the wall is going to win. And I just wonder, like, is Bruce Arians going, oh, my God, we're already looking like it's December for a 43-year-old. This can't be good.
The sizzle of the best goals. The saltiness of the best games.
He's without a stick. He makes another save. And still another save. And play is stopped.
We crave the nightly action in Edmonton and Toronto of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad? He's a good guy.
It's your morning serving of Canadian bacon. Only on the DA Show.
All right, Mirage, take us away. The night in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Thanks, DA. It was win or go home for the Vegas Golden Knights in the Western Conference Finals. The game was tied at 2 as we headed to overtime last night. And for the Golden Knights, Bogish, Dennis was a menace.
Stastny does not have a stick. It's Gurionov on the right wing side. Behind the net, Corey Perry spreads it out wide left. Roope hits up high for Klingberg. Fake the shot. One time, Gurionov! He scores! Dennis Gurionov! The Stars win game 5! They win the series! They win the West! And the Dallas Stars are headed to the Stanley Cup Final!
Yes, yes. Uncle Dennis Gurionov with the overtime winner to send the Stars to the Stanley Cup Final. That courtesy of the Stars Radio Network. Dallas improved to 5-0 in overtime games inside the bubble this year and advanced to their first Stanley Cup since winning their only cup in 1999. And somebody let DA know that Mike Modano is not still on this team.
And I'll let you know that they then played in 2000 and lost to the Devils. That's when the last time they were in the Stanley Cup Final.
So there we go. Thanks to our statistician, Andrew Bogish, for correcting that stat. The soundbite of the night, Jamie, been there, done that, spoke post-game on what winning this game meant.
That says a lot about our group. You know, sometimes it doesn't always go your way in the first couple of periods, but, you know, we stuck with it. And once again, Dobie kept us in it as long as we needed, and we found a way to get it done.
Yes, it was for Dobie keeping him in it. Anton Khudobin was as loose as some salsa verde in net, making 34 saves. He has been incredible in this postseason. The Stars will now sit back and await the winner of the Eastern Conference Finals, and they may just get the Tampa Bay Lightning, who can eliminate the New York Islanders with a win later tonight. And that is your Canadian bacon.
I will give you credit for not going the traditional Jamie Ben Dover, so at least you were original on that front. Congrats on that.
Been there, done that. All right, folks, plenty more to get into the show. Don't forget, it's a Trash Tuesday. Get at DA on Twitter, at DA on CBS. Your trash is coming up later in the hour, and you don't want to hear what I have to say about my ice cream, man. The DA show continues next.
And last night, they watched the Giants offense once again fuddle their way through 60 minutes of football. The flip side was the return of Ben Roethlisberger. After a year away from the game, injuring his arm in week one last year against the Patriots, we found Ben Roethlisberger on the field last night, and he was connecting with his teammates to the tune of three touchdowns. Here's how it sounded.
Ben Roethlisberger back to pass, looking and throws, and it is complete touchdown. Juju Smith-Schuster on a third and four, and his third touchdown pass for Ben Roethlisberger. Juju having fun in the end zone. And by the way, with that touchdown pass, Ben Roethlisberger tying Eli Manning for eighth all-time with touchdown passes in NFL history, and doing it in Eli Manning's old stomping grounds.
I told the guys before the game, it's not about me individually. The reason I came back is for these guys, for this team. It's a special group of football players and men. And so I'm just thankful to be a part of it.
The three touchdowns that Roethlisberger threw come on a night where his numbers don't blow you out of the water. 21 to 32, 229 yards. Didn't have to do a lot because the Giants offense didn't do a lot either. That call was Steelers radio, that of course being Big Ben after the game. I thought that Benny Snell ran the ball really well for Pittsburgh. Another reason why it is just kind of consistently mind-boggling to draft a running back all that high, because the Steelers can lose Le'Veon Bell to free agency and then slide in James Conner, and when Conner's not in, slide in Benny Snell. You know, it's like the Steelers do this better than any other franchise. Lose great talent, draft and develop next great talent, especially on offense. It was a work in progress for a while on defense after they lost the Troy Polamalu's and James Harrison's and those championship-laden defenses of the 2000s. But now they're getting back there, and that defense is now absolutely aggressive and ferocious and on point. But offensively, they've done this for how many years? They draft a wide receiver. He leaves to free agency. They have the next wide receiver ready to go. And last night, Juju Smith-Schuster was that guy. He had six catches, 69 yards, and a pair of touchdowns as well. James Washington had a touchdown. And just by and large, the Steelers did enough to control the tempo of last night's game and basically prove that they are a far superior team to the Giants. For Big Ben, you know, Roethlisberger said all the right things. I'm here for my teammates. This is a great thing. Great team we've got going on. I didn't come back for me. I've accomplished everything that I want to accomplish. But I think that that's kind of, I think it's a little disingenuous. I think Ben Roethlisberger did not want to go out with an injured shoulder keeping him out the entire season. He can say, I came back for these guys. But, you know, I don't think it had to be these guys. I think Big Ben wanted to come back to prove that yet last year is not the way that he's going to end a potentially Hall of Fame career. So I think there's plenty of this that he came back for himself too, which I don't blame him for. I thought last night was a good step forward. It was good. It wasn't great. You know, there were times where Big Ben did not look great, but I don't think you'd expect that. But there were times where the rush was coming and Big Ben was a little off balance and he could whip a pass into the corner of the end zone and lead his receiver and score a touchdown, which is what great quarterbacks can do, kind of flick it up in the air because they've run that play about 3,000 times and put it where it needs to be against an overmatched team. I thought Roethlisberger took advantage of the space that the Giants would give him and, you know, kind of orchestrated a win, and it didn't have to be a 400-yard effort and throwing deep all the time. It just had to be kind of a methodical victory. So I thought that was a win, not only in the standings for Pittsburgh, but also for Ben Roethlisberger. I thought last night was a win. He didn't have to do everything. He didn't. But he didn't want to come out and look awful. He didn't. He was efficient when he needed to be inside the red zone. They scored those touchdowns. That's a good thing. And you mop the floor with a bad Giants team, and then, you know, you move on to bigger fish to fry next week and beyond. So I thought that was a good night for Big Ben. I don't know if you silence all the doubters, because there's plenty of people that are wondering what happens when you take that abuse at 38 years old on your body, and he's taken a lot of it. What happens when he gets hit on that shoulder? What happens over the course of a full season? But for the time being, I thought last night was a win for Big Ben and the Steelers. Mraz, how would you grade out last night for Roethlisberger?
I give him like a C minus. I walked away last night watching Big Ben going, this could be a really long year as the pass rushes get better, the secondaries get better, and the weather gets colder. I mean, the sight of him on the sideline in between already on that elbow, and I understand it's what doctors have ordered, having to wear that overly sized sleeve, keeping his arm warm, and really, I thought the Giants' defense played better than I thought they would. They have a lot of unheralded guys. Lorenzo Carter had a nice night, but he took a little bit of a beating at times. Yeah, okay, he survived it, but all his hits he took, he just looked old taking them. And I think what you saw there when he got cooking on offense was just basically a result of him having chemistry and being in an offense and being with an organization for so long. A lot of it was timing routes, back shoulders, let me beat people on a slant. You know, the Big Ben Roethlisberger plays just weren't there when they probably should have been, because that was a Giants secondary that was absolutely decimated by either opt-outs, injuries, or arrests this offseason. I don't know. I watch Big Ben. I kind of give it an incomplete, but I lean more towards I don't think this is going to end well for him this year.
But you have to, when you talk about chemistry and the experience with those guys, you have to count that as a really positive quality. I mean, because sure, he's been there for so long, even if his arm is not 100% because of the elbow, because of reconstructive surgery, those are the things that are going to help him still be effective. So the fact that we saw that last night, I think, is why it's a victory.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that, but I guess my point would be when we come off this offseason with no mini camp, no preseason games, training camp kind of starting later as far as real practices go for all the testing and everything, I think you're looking early in the season, and I think you kind of saw it in week one where teams that have been together, coaches, quarterbacks, stuff like that, they are going to have a distinct advantage over, especially when they match up with teams that, you know, are kind of new to the scene, new coaches, new systems, new this, new that. And this was a classic matchup of that last night, and as everybody kind of catches up and gets their feet under them, did Big Ben look like somebody who, once every team kind of gets to that level playing field, is going to outshine and outclass some of these big teams in the AFC? Do you think Big Ben versus that Raven defense and the defense taking on Lamar Jackson is ready to play the Baltimore Ravens yet? I don't know. I have a very, very incomplete thought on Big Ben Roethlisberger and how good he's really going to be with the Steelers this year.
Well, I don't think they're ready for the Ravens either. But remember, by virtue of just going out there and not being clowns, they're the second best team of the division.
That's a good way to
put it. Really, the Browns are such a nightmare, and the Bengals are clearly still at the bottom. So, you know, they're going to compete in that division, and it comes down to two games against the Ravens. And I think also when you see Benny Snell run last night,
yeah,
the Steelers do just such a great job of drafting, developing the next guy, that if they can get consistent ground game, and they don't need Roethlisberger to throw for 350. You know, they can win a lot of football games because their defense is that good. Think about their quarterbacking last year. Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph were so bad that just having a guy that can flick the wrist and, you know, hit a back shoulder fade, as you say, is like 1,000 times better than the best play the quarterback had last year for the Steelers.
Well, if T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree are going to give teams exactly 3 seconds to get a playoff, then yeah, absolutely. Maybe you only need Ben Roethlisberger to score 21 points in a game, 24 points in a game like that, and you're not going to get into many shootouts, because if they get into shootouts and the defense lets them down, then they're absolutely done. But it's really remarkable. It's just an indictment, right? We do NFL draft shows every year, and we always try to highlight this guy, that guy, what these teams picking in the top 10 could do. The Steelers are consistently picking around pick 20 or later every single year, and somehow they have completely rebuilt that defense with all of these guys. Their offense just hums along round after round. The amount they develop and take guys without ever having those top picks is unbelievable.
Forget the Patriots. They've had the most success over the last 20 years. The Saints have been very good recently. The Ravens have been very good for a long time. No team, the Packers have been very good, no team drafts as consistently great as the Steelers. Doesn't mean they're 100 for 100. Doesn't mean they're always an A+. But for the last 30 years, basically since Bill Cowher took over for for the end of the Chuck Knoll era in the early 90s. For 30 years, they just draft better than anybody else.
Unbelievable.
They just consistently plug holes, develop the next guy. I mean, honestly, how many franchises lose Le'Veon Bell? By the way, Le'Veon Bell was not a high-round draft pick either. Draft and develop an all-pro like Le'Veon Bell, say, so long, goodbye, and immediately the next 2 years have two running backs that are far superior production-wise to what Le'Veon Bell is right now. What Bell has brought to the Jets is nearly nothing. James Conner and what Snell could be is what the Jets hope that Le'Veon Bell is.
There's no question. How about the wide receiver position? Emmanuel Sanders, no problem. We could replace him. Antonio Brown, all these guys, by the way, again, not high picks. We could replace him. Juju Smith-Schuster now shining. James Washington, Deontay Thompson. It doesn't matter where they take a guy. It doesn't matter where you are. What matters is our plan. And it's just, it's remarkable. It actually crushes my soul when I watch the Steelers play football and you watch around and you remember these drafts and going, well, we could have had that guy. 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 And it's just remarkable.
Yeah, and they've only had two Super Bowl championships with the Roethlisberger years. And so you might say, well, you know, the Steelers have been the second or third best team of the AFC for many of those years. And to only get to three Super Bowls during that time and win two of them, you know, there's been a couple of years where they flamed out in the playoffs and they couldn't beat the Patriots that 1 year and they lost the Jaguars in 2017. And, you know, there's been some bad playoff losses. But it's got to be really fun to be a Steelers fan, because every year you're in it because you draft so damn well. You just mentioned the wide receivers. Let's turn back the clock. Remember Plaxico Burress? Drafted, developed by the Steelers. They say goodbye to him. Santonio Holmes, drafted, developed by the Steelers. Say goodbye to him. You bring in the next guy, the next wide receiver, Antonio Brown. Mike Wallace. Right? Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster. There is just always a hand the baton off. And now the defense is phenomenal. I mean, the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade last year continues to pay dividends. He's great. But they've also drafted so many other pieces. Again, you mentioned TJ Watt. That's not a guy that's a top 15 draft pick. That's a guy that they see something in that a lot of other teams don't and say it's worth the investment for us. And it just keeps paying dividends. That's why I think that last night, just Roethlisberger not being an embarrassment and his elbow not falling off is a huge win, because the defense is awesome. They keep finding skill position guys. And last year they went 8-8 with, I think you could argue, the single worst quarterback season for any 500 team we've seen in recent memory. The fact that they were 500 is nearly a miracle for what Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges put out there at quarterback.
There's a good chance in the Rocks XFL in the spring that Duck Hodges is a backup quarterback in
That's
the XFL.
Right. That's absolutely right.
I say that completely serious.
And he was, they opted for him because Mason Rudolph was so bad late
right.
in the season.
Right, right. That, it is unbelievable. You know what? I'm an idiot. Why did I think the Giants had a shot last night? We just workshopped this for 15 minutes about why the Steelers are so great and so competitive every year, and it's the complete antithesis of what Dave Gettleman's Giants have been. And I woke up yesterday feeling positive about the game, and I wish we had this conversation yesterday, because I absolutely would not have even believed and hoped yesterday.
On Gettleman, sounds like the flames are already licking at his feet, that the kitchen's getting hot, and that if the Giants have a 4-12 season this year, he's going to be out. But that means that there's a new GM that inherits Joe Judge.
Right.
What do you think about that? I mean, I know you want to keep Joe Judge around long term, but do you think it can work if a GM inherits him?
I hate that, which is why I thought when Gettleman was when Shurmur was out, Gettleman should have been out too. I kind of feel like Gettleman's job is going to be saved even in a 4-12 because, I mean, I guess it would depend how it looks, right? I think after watching last night, there's at least more signs that they look like a professional football team more than they have the last couple of years. And
Fair.
If Joe Judge coaches his way through that and there's real signs of, I mean, Daniel Jones, yes, okay, he had the two interceptions, but he had a lot of good moments last night. Again, Joe Judge, they didn't take a lot of bad penalties. They seemed competent, right? They felt like a competent bad team, mm-hmm. which is different than just an awful, ugly bad team. Mm-hmm. And if they do that and they show real signs, And the coach and the owners love Joe Judge, do you want to, you know, burden Joe Judge by bringing in a general manager he's unfamiliar with? Because remember, I mean, it's not like he's been a head coach elsewhere and can kind of pick and choose his guys to, you know, come in and be a GM. So I have a weird feeling that no matter what happens this year, Dave Gettleman's going to survive because I think the ownership and the team is going to love Joe Judge that much.
I do think that's a good read on the Giants, by the way. And I have rolled my eyes at some of Joe Judge's kind of high school gym teacher tactics here. But I thought last night, by and large, they just felt more competent than Pat Shurmur. And I kept looking at last night going, my God, Pat Shurmur is one of the worst coaches in recent NFL history. That he was so overwhelmed. He was such a bum. I mean, they were just totally undisciplined. The offense was a disaster. His play calling was a mess. I just thought that, wow, every time you'll watch the Giants this year, that they're again going to be a 4-12 type team. But they'll feel different than Pat Shurmur's Giants, who were 4-12, simply because they're not just a clown car. It's not like he opened up a VW bug at MetLife Stadium and a bunch of clowns piled out, which was what Pat Shurmur was. I mean, it was awful in Cleveland, and his 2 years in New York with the Giants, you're like, this guy is not a head coach. I don't know what Gettleman, I don't know what the Mariners saw in this dude.
Oh, he was an adult at the table. That's what they kept saying, because Ben McAdoo was so bad. So because one guy was bad, you settled for another guy. I mean, that's a lot of bad football. That's why, look, last night I'm coming off two Ben McAdoo years and two Pat Shurmur years. So when I watched last night and they lose the game 26-16, and yes, that's a horrible pick there at the end. You know, I mean, they're in the game in the first half. They didn't have a lot of big names on defense. I don't know. It was the most breath of fresh air 10-point loss I felt in about 4 years. Really, and I know the bar is so low. But there was competent football on the field, and all I'm looking for is good football. So I think the next 15 weeks or so, I mean, they're going to tell a big story, but I didn't wake up this morning ready to unravel my guts out because it's another lost year. I think there's a lot of signs of promise because of the way they looked on the field last night.
It sounds like a bad order at a bar. After a pair of McAdoos, two Shurmurs, you know, I was just a beaten man.
I was.
Sick to I'm the beacon stuff. Of light, and I'm the beacon of hope.
Oh, there's hope. Now there's hope.
Those two guys. How long ago does it feel that the Giants made the playoffs? I mean, that year one of Ben McAdoo feels like it was a bazillion years ago.
It feels so long. Matter of fact, I went to a game in Cleveland that year, and a picture surfaced that I was showing on Facebook. And what really made it feel old to me is that I looked exactly the same fat-wise, and I haven't spent this entire Giant terrible run of not making playoffs losing any weight. So that just reminds me, wow, it feels so long. Oh, you've done nothing to help your stomach since.
Oh, what's eating you?
People that get in the left lane and drive the speed limit.
I gotta trash the NFL, man.
Trash my ex-girlfriend.
You want me to trash that?
Trash Tuesday, my favorite day of the week, not for nothing.
Time to vent. We take it out like the trash. It's Trash Tuesday.
All right, Mirage, lead us off. Who are you trashing?
I gotta trash my local ice cream man in my neighborhood who I loved all summer. His name is Mr. Softy. I mean, I think that's just the company's name. I don't know his actual name.
Sure.
But DA, I have not seen this guy since Monday afternoon. You know, I know the timing. It's usually
since
around 5:30.
Monday afternoon, like yesterday afternoon?
No, last Monday, Labor Day afternoon.
Oh.
So Sunday, I'm outside. I'm watching games in my yard. It's, you know, it's getting warm. I said, you know what I could go for right around kickoff of the Bucks and Saints? Mr. Softy will be here soon. Again, even on the weekend, nowhere to be found. I figured maybe school started, so he's not going to come around as much during the week. But what is this mindset people have with ice cream? It's like the moment summer ends, well, we stop eating ice cream? Now, you want to tell me, you know what, Mr. Softy, trekking around November, December, it's a little cold. I understand we have other ice cream places to go to. It's beautiful out in September. Back in my old neighborhood, the ice cream man used to come around during a World Series in October. Labor Day, you pack up shot? Had I known, I would have loaded up more in August. Get this guy out. He's ruining my September.
Trash him.
Charlie Sheen just dumped that on the set of Men at Work.
How would you have loaded up? Wouldn't you just go to the grocery store and buy a bunch of ice cream?
It's different, DA. It's like watching college football without a band. It's the pageantry of getting the ice cream, man.
Okay, well, what can you keep? What can you load up and keep for September from the ice cream truck that you can't get at a grocery store?
No, it's not keeping. I just meant I would have gotten him more and inhaled more in August and felt like I felt like I got my fix.
So you would have bought like $72 worth of ice cream to eat by yourself on Labor Day, had you known that was the last day.
Yeah, or throughout August, anytime the ice cream had passed, if I was cutting the lawn and stuff, I'll get them tomorrow, I'll get them tomorrow. I kept putting it off. I got them maybe twice in August. I would have gotten them like 8-10 times in August, DA. The butterscotch off the truck, the hot fudge. I can't make my own hot fudge at home. I mean, there's certain things you get,
And it takes the convenience of not having to go to an ice cream shop. It's coming right to your door.
You know what?
Labor Day, you know, let everybody know. It's like a water park closing then. Hey, guys, it's the last day I'm going to be here. You didn't let me know.
You know what I find shocking is that you looked at a picture from 4 years ago of you at a Cleveland Browns game and said, boy, I can't believe I haven't lost weight over the last 4 years.
I mean, it's
what am I doing wrong?
Man. I mean, it's a little slice of America to get the ice cream, man. Am I not entitled? I mean, come on.
You're entitled to do whatever you want, but I just always find it so entertaining that you somehow don't realize why you keep gaining weight. Like, well,
I realize, I just don't like admitting it.
Because you'd prefer to eat the butterscotch off of the ice cream truck like it's a bowl of cereal. Like, you'll just pour a little bit of cereal on the butterscotch and then just actually eat that.
You know what? You get addicted to the butterscotch off an ice cream truck, then come talk to me.
Good comeback. Okay.
Yes.
AB, who are you trashing?
DA, apologies in advance. We're getting a little bit serious here on Trash Tuesday. I got to trash all of the people, at least on my social media feeds, that didn't watch the NFL this weekend and wanted to tell me about it. Most of you weren't going to watch in the first place, so I'm not sure how big of a stance you're taking by not watching the NFL, but if you did watch the NFL through Ray Rice and Greg Hardy and other actually bad things and then bailed because you couldn't stand players kneeling or putting their fist in the air before the national anthem, then it's also a terrible stance on you. If you stayed for the bad stuff, you don't get to leave when the fake bad stuff in your head comes up now. So trash them. Get them all out.
Overflowing landfill.
Yeah, boy, the NFL has had about a bazillion reasons to tune out over the last 20 years. If you are still with them after this, you should just stick with it because we've seen the worst of the worst for the NFL. Pete the Body Bellotti, who are you trashing?
Oh, great transition. I'm trashing surfers at the beach that take their time leaving the beach. I'm getting sick and tired of sitting waiting for parking spots because they got to take off their wetsuit. Enough of this garbage. Get in the car. Get your towel on and get the hell out of here.
Get him
you
out.
Don't even believe this yourself.
I smell rotten eggs.
This is the first time he cracked on his own trash.
It's such a common American experience for so many of us. How many of us are just trapped waiting for a parking spot as the surfers take off their wetsuits?
So ridiculous.
Wait, enough. I got to know, Pete, what surfer name do you give these guys when you're cursing them out in your car? Like Brody? What do you call this guy as he's taking
Lee.
His wetsuit off?
Lee. Lee. L-E-I-G-H. Lee.
Lee. L-E-I-G-H.
Chad. Chad's taking off his wetsuit
Zach.
Again. I am trashing lawnmower guys. I don't know when this industry became the kind of like the most in demand position ever, but I got the belt popped off of my mower the other day. So I'm like, all right, I got to call up a mower guy to bring this in and get it fixed. The first guy calls back and goes, well, I can't get to your mower for about 6 or 7 weeks. What? 6 or 7 weeks. There's going to be snow over my lawn. I don't need it in 6 or 7 weeks, man. So then the next guy calls me back after taking the entire weekend off, by the way. Mower guys do not work Saturdays or Sundays. Must be really nice. Okay. So they come. The next guy calls me back. Yeah, well, I might be able to look at it in about a week. I'm like, okay, so I should bring it in a week? He's like, no, you should drop it off today, but I might not look at it for another week. I'm like, well, then why would I drop it off today? You can't look at it, and then he's got to order parts after that and then work on it. I'm like, what is going on? I must live in a part of the country where there's like 3 mower guys for about 17 million people. I don't know, unless this is like the hardest skill set to learn. I don't know, but mower guys just playing me out like it's a doctor. I mean, I'm like, I'm not getting heart surgery here. Why do I have to wait 6 weeks to get my mower back? Bellotti, trash him.
Beep, beep. Sanitation just arrived.
So take out your trash right here on the DA show. Tweet at me, DA on CBS. DA on CBS. Alien OG tweets, I'm trashing grown men who trash Mr. Softy.
Ouch.
And as we talk about this kind of never-ending saga at Bob's Bar, Mraz's dad's outdoor bar that was featured in the New York Post as a gathering spot for friends and family during the pandemic and watching Giants games now. There's been a little worry that this could become a little too big. And so yesterday, one of the local cable sports networks, SNY, Sportsnet New York, wanted to do a digital profile for a digital series online of where fans are gathering. So they bring a camera crew. Mraz, what did this camera crew consist of last night for this?
I'm embarrassed to say, the camera crew was my wife on an iPhone emailing them.
Okay, so they told you what shots that they needed, and then you had to shoot it and email it to them?
Yes, so this is their safety protocol. They wanted the videos shot by the people themselves, so they gave me kind of a list of how they wanted this to go, because again, I'm apparently handling PR and sales for Bob's Bar. Mm-hmm. This is what they're looking for. This is what they need. Please email here, and the guy would text me throughout the tailgating proceedings. Okay, this was good. I need this. So it was almost like directing from afar.
And you're a little worried because it took Bob 4 takes to do the intro to this.
It was rough. It was rough. I mean, you got to. I don't want to spoil it. I'm sure we'll play the audio when it comes out.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
There was some points where you cringe. Just put it that way. You cringe. But we have to settle for what we got right.
What? Because you're worried that your dad or your family don't have the natural on-air charisma that you do?
Yes, it's very evident that I got a little something. They don't got a little something. You know what I mean? Like it just.
Here we go.
If they just come across awkward, where I'm more smooth. Now I'm not acting like a professional, but now you know, picture a deli man and some bank workers here. I mean, what do you think is going to happen on a camera? It's just, I'm worried that they're not going to realize the joke's on them. You know.
Sean got stupid jeans from his father's side.
Are you ever worried that you don't realize the joke is on you?
No, I'm not worried about it. I'm very much aware the joke's on me. But now take that to another level.
Well,
get out. There you go.
So you're thinking, well, at least there were some conversations last night that maybe this SNY show could create some attention for a larger spinoff for Bob's Bar.
So I didn't have this conversation directly with my father, but in sources close to my father yesterday, the belief was his excitement leading into SNY now wanting this, on top of the fame that had built on Sunday from the New York Post article, was he had bigger dreams that you never know who sees this. We got to make sure the lawn's cut and go right. You know, the Kardashians got their start because of a video.
Your dad's quitting the deli today. Food Town, I'm out.
Now, people found the Chrisleys as well. He thinks there's going to be like some kind of there's a chance at least for some kind of spinoff where picture like a hybrid of Cheers and the Kardashians. I think that's what he's hoping for is that somebody's going to have read the post, see the SMY digital series, and he's going to be approached about this. And now this is the next big thing, keeping up with Bob's Bar.
So, Instead of a makeup line, it's Sarah Mraz's buffalo wing sauce.
Bob's margarita sauce.
But he doesn't realize, and the cover's going to be blown up when they realize it's not your own taco ingredients. You just got Jose Olay out of the freezer. I mean, so he has dreams. Man. Look, there's nothing wrong with dreams.
No,
you know, he's supported
not.
My dreams. So if his dreams are we don't make a sex tape, but we make an SMY digital tape, and this leads to something, then we're good.
I mean, it's just amazing that, one write-up of the New York Post could lead you to dreams of becoming the Kardashians with a reality show that's watched throughout the world. Bars.
I just want to defend him just briefly. You got to realize, it was a New York Post article that led to him signing autographs and led to a producer from SNY reaching out to spiral this thing forward to video. So, I mean, I understand, where over the course of 24 hours, how all of a sudden you could really feel your oats a little bit.
The signing of the autographs is amazing. Have you ever signed 4 autographs?
In my life, definitely. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you did sign quite a number in Boise.
Absolutely. And there have been times where I have signed autographs for people out in my local village and stuff because they think I'm a bigger deal than I am.
Is that right? So you'll be stopped at a bar to sign an autograph? What have you signed?
People have just brought like
tell me a girl's chest.
No. Like receipts at the restaurant to say I was at the same restaurant as them. I've been asked to take a lot of selfies. Like, hey, are you Mraz? Can you take a picture of me?
Okay. But the autograph is different. What have you signed?
I told you I've signed a Del Fuego receipt. Definitely.
Can I change my trash, DA?
I've actually. This one is funny. Awesome. This one is funny.
This is awesome. Can you imagine? There's a Del Fuego receipt with Mraz's autograph. Stuffed in somebody's garbage drawer.
And 2 years ago on a Friday night.
You know when you sign the receipt for your own food, it's not an autograph, right, Sean?
Yeah, right. If it said it put tip here, that's not actually an autograph for us.
I have signed this one. You guys are going to lose this one. And I'm sorry. I never told the story 2 years ago. I've signed somebody's Yankee hat because I'm a Yankee fan on the show and it's been portrayed that way. That a Yankee, oh, you're a big Yankee fan. Can you sign us, represent us because of the crying over Derek Jeter thing? So I signed the brim of a hat with a white Sharpie Yankee hat that's in somebody's glass case somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure it's in the glass case.
Sounds trash.
Oh, shame.
Yeah. It's shoved in the back of a closet with 16 other Yankee hats. Oh, who signed this? What? Who wrote on this cap? I don't know. I have no idea. Throw
Is
it
that
away.
Pat Kelly?
Here's today's poll question. Would Schwartz accept a signed Sean Yankees hat?
Oh, this gets better by the day. Oh, phenomenal. The saga of Bob's Bar continues. Oh, I can't wait to see this video. When is this video going to air?
We were told, or my wife was told through the videos, the premiere is Thursday at 5 o'clock.
What do you mean a premiere? That's digital.
That's what I don't understand either. So I have to contact this guy today. By saying premiere at 5 o'clock, I'm starting to wonder and worry, is this going to make SNY TV and not just the digital?
Because man.
Because 5 o'clock premiere seems like, you know, it's not like if it's digital, you just drop it whenever. Why would you say premieres at a certain time? So I'm going to get more details. All I know is Thursday, 5 o'clock is going to be available somewhere. And I'm sure then we'll figure out if agents need to be hired or anything beyond it.
And then suddenly the Mraz signed Del Fuego receipt becomes the new Mike Trout rookie card. It goes on eBay immediately.
Bonus Wagner.
You know how they have cards that have like slices of jerseys on them?
Yeah.
Can we embed like a tortilla shell and a Sean sign something?
You laugh. If we could get back to normal by next summer, our kickoff the summer party show is going to be at Bob's Bar. No doubt. We're lining it up. We're bringing in listeners. Let's go.
Tops comes to Mraz and has him cut up his old, like, New York Giants Chase Blackburn jersey instead. The ones with the barbecue sauce stain are really important. We got to put those in the foil cards. Who was that shirt that you had? Was it Brian Keel?
Brian Keel, yes.
They start having you cut up your Brian Keel jersey.
Ruben Drones jersey, animal.
All right, AB has our headlines. Mr. Bogues.
I think Sean gave Big Ben a C- for his return from major elbow surgery, however you grade him, last night.
Three touchdowns, no interceptions, got a C-.
Yeah, exactly. A C- despite things like this.
Ben Roethlisberger back to pass, looking, and throws, and it is complete touchdown. Juju Smith-Schuster on a 3rd and 4, and his 3rd touchdown pass for Ben Roethlisberger. Juju having fun in the end zone. And by the way, with that touchdown pass, Ben Roethlisberger tying Eli Manning for 8th all-time with touchdown passes in NFL history and doing it in Eli Manning's old stomping ground.
Mraz's grades are hysterical. Ben Roethlisberger wins the football game, throws three touchdowns, no interceptions, comes back from career-threatening surgery, gets a C-. Daniel Jones loses the game, throws a back-breaking, crushing red zone interception, gets a B+. I don't know. Had a good game.
Great drive. It was a great drive.
The Steelers and Big Ben managed the 26-16 win at Ole Miss Giant Stadium last night. Saquon Barkley just 6 yards on 15 carries. And yes, those two picks from Daniel Jones. Now, a lesser kicker might have faked the leg injury, but Steven Gostkowski kept going out there despite missing 3 field goals and a PAT. Finally connected from 25 yards out, 17 seconds to play to get his Titans a 16-14 win in Denver to close out week one. Anton Hudobin, with 34 saves to get his Stars into the Stanley Cup final last night. Dallas won the West in 5, 3-2 in overtime over the Golden Knights. The winner from Denis Gurianov away from the playoffs. The Capitals reportedly hiring Peter Laviolette as their new head coach. Baseball last night, the Padres a 7-2 win over the Dodgers. That's 8 in a row for them. They're just a game and a half behind LA now in the NL West, while the White Sox are 2 clear. The Twins atop the AL Central after beating them 3-1 in Chicago. Now, you guys have to tell me, looking at the clock, I see Pete's texting. Are we still doing Stun to a News, or do you want to wait for it?
No, let's
let's do it. Stun to a News.
doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Why do I feel like this could happen at Bob's Bar as well? But it's happening right now with Ole Miss football. They have a good idea of selling souvenir cups honoring healthcare workers at their football games this year. Not sure they're actually going to donate any proceeds to those healthcare workers, but a good thought nonetheless to honor them however possible, except when you don't vet the picture of the healthcare worker you put on your souvenir cup. Oh, now, one of the doctors on the cup is not a doctor. He just plays one in adult films.
Oh,
Johnny, the aptly named Johnny Sins appears dressed as a doctor because some hottie didn't feel well and needed to give her some medicine, I guess. But he was put on this cup like other doctors and nurses. And there's a lot of pictures on this cup. You guys can see it. I need to meet the eagle-eyed Johnny Sins fan that spotted their boy amongst all of these faces on the cup, but there he is.
Wow, that is amazing. That is truly amazing, because you're right. It's hard to decipher any of the people on this cup because it's colored red, and then all of the profiles of the people are kind of like faded into the background. There's tons of them. How do you pick out the porn star in there unless you've seen a lot of his work?
Well, DA, exactly. Look, it was a lonely couple months during this pandemic, which I would also say just shows you not all heroes during the pandemic were healthcare workers. Some were fake healthcare workers. So I actually don't have a problem with Johnny Sins being on this cup.
Okay. There's a lot of funny content on the internet about Johnny Sins. Number one, there's a Twitter handle for Dr. Johnny Sins, and his profile says helping America through the pandemic one patient at a time.
What a great guy.
Wow. Also, Johnny Sins.
Not his birth name, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
His Wikipedia profile has movies that he starred in, and one movie is called It's a Mommy Thing.
Oh, boy.
Mothership at the movies today, boys?
And today's Mothership at the movies, It's a Mommy Thing. Okay, guys, let's start out with Johnny Sins. Did you believe him as a doctor? Because I thought that his prescription was a little overdone there.
2 segments or 3 segments?
And I had no idea you could use a stethoscope that way.
Bogus's kid's asking to watch that movie with him with the popcorn.
All right. Kids, it's either Rookie of the Year or It's a Mommy Thing. Which one do we want to go with today?
Mommy Thing.
Not that type of mommy.
Wow, Henry Rowan Gardner grew up.
There's actually a pretty good chance that one person that was in one of the horrible movies we watched now is an adult film star.
Yeah, watch. That's so true. Watch out for your Henry Rowan Gardner jokes, though, because he was also nicknamed, remember, Garden Hoser. So when we mix that together with what we're talking about, it's going to get a little dicey.
It's this date in Mothership history.
All right, let's go back on this date. 4 years ago, September the 15th, 2016, our friend Little Mo had called in, and we started debating whether or not Little Mo could easily replace Mraz. Let's roll tape.
It's not fair to pin me against Little Mo, because I do think he'd make an excellent sports radio producer.
The problem is that I'm then taking orders from a 10-year-old, which I don't know if I can handle that.
The 10-year-old would have Monday through Friday hours before Ward does.
From what you've seen Mraz do on a daily basis, what would Little Mo succeed at quickest?
Well, Little Mo would first off have to know that he has to eat his dinner every day at 4 o'clock. That's number one.
That'd be tough, because 10-year-olds eat a little bit later than that.
Yeah, usually I think he probably eats dinner around 6, so he'd have to move it up a couple hours.
Okay. Do you think...
I think the hardest part would be interacting with the callers, because Mraz is actually pretty good about that.
Okay, but... All we got to teach little Mo to do is, hi, this is the DA show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Right. And you know his spelling is definitely better than Mraz's.
Come on.
Sometimes he puts cities and states up there that don't exist.
Number two, though, he'd have to learn editing on the Burley system, which isn't Burley, B-U-R-L-I, not B-U-R-L-Y.
Yeah, that's our audio editing equipment here at CBS Sports Radio. I think he could learn it rather quickly.
But a 10-year-old, I mean, now a millennial, you know, technology.
Oh, he's quick on the computer. I bet you he'd pick it up a lot quicker than any of us did.
Yeah. So, okay, so that might not be hard. Booking guests, it might be tough to convince a writer or a broadcaster or an athlete or a PR person to have the guests come on if you're talking to a 10-year-old. They might not take it seriously.
I figured out the lingo with guests. A lot of them turn me down, but I figured out the lingo.
But the point about that is Mraz doesn't like calling people, so a lot of it is via text and email.
Right.
So if Lil Mo is a good speller, theoretically no one will know that he is 10 years old.
That's actually a great point. 4 years ago, Lil Mo stepping in for an executive producer role here on the show.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
All right, so today we asked you guys, who's the bigger problem in Cleveland? The Browns dealing with their quarterback, Baker Mayfield, or their wide receiver, you know, Odell Beckham. Mraz, let me just ask you, who do you think is the bigger problem in Cleveland personally?
To me, it's got to be Baker Mayfield because he's far more important and was their first overall pick and is chasing the demons of every failed quarterback in Cleveland.
I tend to agree. I think as problematic as the attitude is for Odell Beckham, and he's been a problem for many years for many coaches and GMs, ultimately, it's your quarterback that has to set the tone, and I don't think Baker Mayfield's good enough to set that tone. And so I wonder if even getting rid of Odell Beckham, if they do it at the trade deadline, if they part ways with him next offseason, what have you, if you ever get anything solved there, if Baker Mayfield's not the guy to do it. And I wonder, you were saying that our sources in Cleveland, namely Ken Carmen, say that most Browns fans are fed up with both of them. They want to get rid of Baker Mayfield already. Could this be the last year? I don't know if you know the fans will have their voices heard enough to where it actually happens, but could this be the last go-round for Baker Mayfield as the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns? Could this be the swan song this year?
I mean, I don't want to overreact to week one, DA, but you're seeing two teams with quarterbacks in that draft class, Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, Jets and Browns. One of those teams could be picking first overall for Trevor Lawrence. So if that's the case, heck yeah, this could be it for Baker Mayfield.
Who do you believe in more, Darnold or Mayfield as a franchise QB?
I think I still believe more in Sam Darnold. I do. I just think he's been put a mess with Adam Gase and no receivers. I mean, Baker Mayfield, how many more weapons do you need? He's got two great running backs, receivers all over the place, and he's still only putting up 6 points.
I think I would agree. I still lean Sam Darnold here. I think if Darnold has the right pieces, I just like a lot of stuff about him. But it's getting harder and harder for us to defend some of these guys. We really like Josh Rosen. really like Sam Rosen. Josh Rosen, we really like Sam Darnold. We like Sam Rosen on play-by-play as well. But it's harder and harder to defend these guys. I mean, what happens if the Jets start this season 1-5? Are you and I still going to be defending Sam Darnold?
It's going to be hard to, but he has no receivers. And Bell is hurt, and Adam Gase is terrible. You know what? Maybe by default, we might be right that Josh Rosen was the best quarterback out of all those guys.
It's crazy. That draft seemed like there was a plethora of really good QBs. And now Josh Allen's got major questions, although they won on Sunday, but his accuracy issues are real. Sam Darnold has yet to win a big game. And Josh Rosen's out of a job. and Baker Mayfield, we come to the end of this season, the guy might be out of a job as well, which would leave only Lamar Jackson as the guy that got drafted and still as the franchise QB in a draft that had five quarterbacks taken to the first round. Isn't that nuts?
That was supposed to be, you know, the Elway, Jim Kelly draft class, and it's a big heaping pile of garbage, which also just tells you, relax when everybody says we need to tank for this guy. It's this kind of rich class. You just don't know once you get in the NFL.
You have no idea. So your advanced analytics, who's the bigger problem? 62% of respondents said Baker Mayfield is the quarterback. 62% said it's Baker over Odell. You know you're a problem when compared to Odell, 62% of people said you're the bigger problem. That's a bad place to be. In 17 games with the Browns, Odell has 77 catches for 1,000 yards and 4 touchdowns. The 4 touchdowns is a problem, but if you basically look at that as one season plus a game, the number is 77 catches for 1,057 yards. Not terrible, but still not that good either. Yikes. All right, that is your advanced analytics this morning. So this Bob's Bar thing is just funny as hell in that Mraz's dad, Bob the Deli Man, has just always loved getting everybody together to watch games, right? Wouldn't you say even before Bob's Bar, it was inviting everybody over the house to watch the Giants game or a Yankees playoff game or something and ordering a lot of food and having everybody down in the basement watch it on the couch, right? That's just how you grew up.
Yeah, every Sunday, that was religion in my house. It was, we watch the Giants, here's who's coming over, we're all going to hang out, and if you want to have idle chit-chat, you go upstairs, we're here to watch the game, eat, have a couple drinks, and have a good time.
So when your dad, how did he stumble upon the idea of building the bar in the yard?
Well, it's a copycat league, D.A. My uncle Ray had built a bar on his own because he's actually handy, and you know, and he built a bar on his own in the backyard, and it's pretty cool, and he's got a nice thing out east, and my dad wanted to kind of up it and take it to another level, and just had this vision and had this idea for a long time. You know, when the check's clear, we're gonna do this, and he saved away. Might have took a couple people passing away to collect some inheritance, and then he invested into the bar.
Hey, smart financial
yes.
plan there. So he ends up having this bar built in the yard, and it's now been up for 2 summers, right?
Yes. They just completed summer number 2. Obviously needed brunch this year to make sure it survived the pandemic. But yes, summer number 2 is done.
And so neighbors, family, friends come from all over Long Island to sit at Bob's Bar in the yard and enjoy a few beers. And there's multiple TVs that he has set up. He will cook on the grill as well. There was something called a back bar in year number 1. I don't know if the back bar survived until year number 2 for overflow crowd. Did it?
It's become a coat rack because you can only have, you know, 25% capacity this year in New York. So we're hoping that next summer the back bar can get cleaned up a little bit. And remember, D.A., there was the live music concert from the parade last year to close out summer. I mean, there have been some real events there.
Yep, absolutely. And it's just been a whole thing. And so this year, the New York Post got wind of this, I would say probably because Mraz was doing his PR via Schwartz. And so they caught wind of this. And the New York Post said, we want to profile this. So they profiled Bob's Bar this past weekend for their Sunday edition. And there's a full color spread of Bob's Bar and Bob the Deli Man, Mraz's dad, you know, welcoming all of his guests in. So now, not only is this such a big deal that he's getting autograph requests at the grocery store where he works, the deli counter, but also SNY, Sportsnet New York, the local sports cable station that carries Mets games and other stuff, sports-wise, wants to do a piece on Bob's Bar, which we thought was going to be digital only for the website, but apparently could air on TV as well. And now we have photo shoots and film sessions at Bob's Bar. And the whole thing is just expanded into something we could have never seen. The beast from within is now unleashed. And so now we're seeing what's happening with a little bit of celebrity. It is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Who are the people that need your dad's signature on the New York Post. And what are they going to do with the New York Post? Are they going to frame an autograph of Bob the Deli Man's signature above a story about his outdoor bar?
So you must be pretty upset after the Yankees lost.
Bill Mazeroski. I hate him.
So I know that one person did tell him yesterday on Silvercraft, nobody famous ever comes through here.
Mickey Mantle makes $100,000 a year. How much does your father make?
I don't know.
You don't know? See if your father can't pay the rent. Go ask Mickey Mantle and see what he tells you.
So I think it's just the idea that they think because they get their cold cuts and rotisserie chickens from this guy, and then his big picture is in the New York Post on the fourth page, they feel like they can't wait to frame it and show all their friends, this is my deli guy. Look, he's a big deal. He owns this bar. So I don't fully grasp it. I don't get it. Maybe there's some jealousy for me. I look at my dad, I'm like, you know, you can sign an autograph. So I'm the one with the blue check mark on Twitter. I don't know who you are to sign autographs. But there's a power struggle going on throughout the family right now. These 2 days have been, his ego's through the roof.
The big ragu.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. I long to see the day where I walk into a random home on Long Island and there is a framed copy of Bob the Deli Man's autograph in the New York Post above the couch. I just long for the day where that happens. Oh, man, that is great. Yep, and here's Grandma, and here's Aunt Billy, and there's my deli guy who autographed it in the New York Post.
Mickey Mantle don't care about you, so why should you care about him? Nobody cares.
Here's our wedding photos. Here's the first birthday of our firstborn. Here's my deli guy's autograph.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
It's just all parts amazing. Every single bit of it. I don't know how you're going to keep the egos in check over there, Mraz. Your egos run amok. Now, Bob, the deli man's run amok as well. Your entire family thinks they should be keeping up with the Mrazes on Bravo. I don't know. This is going to be – you guys are going to get in a bad way over here.
Yeah, am I going to become Rob Kardashian? I mean, basically eat myself off the show? Is that basically the next step in my life? I don't know what's going to happen here.
What part of the Kardashians do you actually think apply well to the Mraz clan?
Oh, good question. I think I'm Kim because I really am the star.
Oh, wow.
There it is.
I am. My dad's got a lot of Kris Jenner in him. Kind of, you know, he'll organize everything up. Obviously, you know, live on his kid's success, that kind of deal. I think for sure. Sarah's definitely Khloe. I think there's some self-conscious issues there trying to compete. I guess Sam is more of a Courtney. More grounded and whatnot. And Eli the Pomsky, I think, and along with Taylor, both of my children, if you will, they got to be Kendall and Kylie, because I think ultimately they'll be the most successful of riding off the rest of the family's coattails and making everything off social media. So that's where I would rank everybody at this point.
Who's going to be most upset by those comparisons?
Oh, Bob, definitely.
No, notice I left my mom out of it.
Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit? Car, motorcycle, RV policies, that's on top of what Geico could already save you. What are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. You know, Cap said in our G-Chat that he would definitely watch Keeping Up with the Mrazes, but I don't know if I would. What do you think, AB? Would you tune in to watch that?
I'll watch Thursday on SNY.TV and then get back to me Monday morning. We'll see if it's enough to pique my interest for an actual expanded full episode.
This is like the pilot episode for SNY.
Yeah.
We're hoping it gets cleared.
Meeting up with the Mrazes, but meeting spelled M-E-A-T.
Yes.
Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. And thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headline. Tomorrow, Charles Davis is going to join us. Be good and be good to one another. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership Disconnects.
Okay, picture this.
It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.